Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, a weekly web lab where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half-free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Nima V, how are you?
What it do, Michael Dean? I'm good. How are you?
I'm excellent. Did you, so I have two different possibilities of what to call this cast, and I want your opinion, and I made these both up, and they're both good sloganeering. One is, anywhere you can't legally carry a gun isn't really America.
I think there's a lot of places that probably aren't really America these days, then, but that's very good. What else you got?
The second one is, moderates are people who want everything to be a little bit illegal.
I like that one. That's the one I'd pick.
That one probably has more to do with what we're talking about today. I don't know how much gun stuff's in this one, but
moderates basically want everything to suck slightly.
I mean, I was arguing with someone the other day who was like, I'm open-minded. I think marijuana should be easily available by prescription and regulated and taxed by the government. And I'm like,
right. You can have a little bit of freedom. I'm that generous. I'm just a nice guy like that. Disgusting.
So did you make it through the? Did you make it through alive through the 9/11 porn parade?
Luckily, I don't have a porn in my face telescreen that was blaring it at me 24/7. I have the Hulu hooked up through the PS3, and that's how I get my TV. Or I'm online, so either way, I get to choose what I watch and when I watch it, and I don't have to listen to the talking heads or the bimbo blondes telling me about how everybody's dying for my freedoms all day every day.
I spent the day before 9/11 listening to various patriotic music to try to find some good background music for the ad we made. And it was a really nice day, and I had my windows open, and I was listening to it fairly loudly, and like the neighbors could hear. And DJ said, the neighbors probably think that you're listening to it to gird your loins against the Muslims.
Now, explain to me that term, gird your loins.
Gird your loins.
It's a great phrase.
It is a phrase, and it means, to put on your battle armor. To protect your balls from the Muslims.
Right. Now, the word loins is kind of confusing because, when you talk about like a pork loin or a beef loin, it's like a big piece of meat from like the back area, right? Along the spine. But when you talk about a human's loins, it's their junk.
It's not just their junk. I mean, girding your loins would also be putting armor over your femoral artery on the inside of your leg. One of the easiest ways to kill somebody is to stab them right there.
Loins is basically vital pieces of animals.
Yeah. It's protect the my
the most
balls.
Important parts.
Yeah. So we made this second fake radio ad. I think we're going to do a whole series of these. And this one is even better than the Compliacin ad. And it's called, what was it called?
Yes, and I did much less work on it. So
you go. You were great. You just weren't available that day. You just need to move into my basement. So we can work all the time. But
there we go. Like we did with the movie,
pretty much. There's a house for sale across the street for me.
Is there? How much?
$169,000.
It's not bad.
Yeah. But this one's called The Joys of Expanding the Government. And it's a PSA from a fake political action committee called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF.
Right. I love the acronym. I love how you, because you came up with the acronym this time. I did Pilfer last time.
I worked for like an hour.
Kind of one-upped me on the acronym.
I was scribbling stuff on paper for like an hour, and it just jumped out at me.
Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan political action committee whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? Through horizontal enforcement. Horizontal enforcement is how concerned citizens help grow government with our day-to-day attitudes and actions. because no matter how much government expands, there can't always be a police officer or federal agent everywhere. That's where you come in. Start snitching. If you see something, even if it's nothing, say something. When you're not busy spying on your neighbors or squinting at everyone, spout an endless stream of verbal horizontal enforcement. Tell anyone who will listen, and especially those who don't want to listen, why more government is a good thing. Do this constantly. You'll get a warm and fuzzy feeling demanding more taxes, arguing in favor of gun control while militarizing our police, and shaming anyone who's caught breaking any law or criticizing our justice system. Who needs innocent until proven guilty? If someone gets arrested, they're probably guilty. So act like they are until they are. Here at CatMuff, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. Because more government means more warm, fuzzy feelings for all of us. CatMuff. 'Cause folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
CatMuff is not a real political action committee. It's a fiction created for satirical expression protected by the First Amendment, which may still exist in some form despite the so-called Patriot Act. This ad was actually produced by the good people at the Freedom Fiends podcast. That's FreedomFeens.com.
It is so statist that, like, writing it actually made me a little bit sick to my stomach. And it's been an amazing response to it. It's gotten almost 1,800 views as of right now, a few days in. It got blogged on Claire Wolf. Claire Wolf blogged it. Claire Wolf is... If you go to the FAQ on the gunsandweed.com site, the FAQ for the movie is the interview you and I did with Claire Wolf, or she interviewed us.
Right. She writes for a blog, Backwoods Home, or something like that.
Yeah, Backwoods Home. And she's a libertarian writer who's been writing forever. You know, I mean, she inspired Boston Tea Party to write. And she's best known for the statement, America is at that awkward stage. It's too late to work within the system and too early to shoot the bastards. And...
I think we're still kind of in that awkward stage.
Yeah, yeah. There's people who say we're not.
Very prescient and very true still.
There's people who say we're not, but Freedom Fiends can't endorse that. But some say it's time or time's up, and that's based on her statement. And there's even a don't tread on me flag that instead of saying don't tread on me, says time's up. Mama Liberty has one in front of her house and has a picture of it on her Facebook.
Right. Well, we can't shoot the bastards yet because, you know, we don't agree with aggression.
We don't endorse that, but we find the statement amusing and we really like her. And she loved it so much. She emailed me about it as well as blogging it. We've been getting a lot of traffic from her on the Freedom Fiend site too.
So she's listening to the cast?
I don't know, but she linked the YouTube video and the podcast.
Nice.
She emailed me about it and said we're funny as hell and don't have a reverent bone in our body. And I wrote her back and said, hey, if you want to write one of these with us, we'd love to do it. So maybe she
Oh, that'd be great. Yep. Have Claire Wolf help guest write for us.
Yep.
Genius.
We got like 1,000 views of this in like 24 hours, which I think is the most I've ever gotten on YouTube for anything. I've helped someone else with a video that got like 1 million hits in a month, but I was just...
Well, you did the porcupine ad for Free State, New Hampshire, didn't you? That got...
No, that didn't...
Views.
I did that. DJ and I did that all ourselves. You know, that got, I don't know, 10,000 views or something, but... No, I did this thing with Ellen Lustofka, the guy who I wrote the book with, the YouTube book.
Right.
He wrote it. I produced DJ doing the voiceover for it, and then I did some voiceover in it too. But he wrote it, directed it, did everything in it. We were just doing the voice in it. And that's had like 1.4 million views in like a year, which isn't incredibly viral, but it's the, you know, most popular thing I've been involved with. But it was...
A million views is a lot. I mean, that's an amazing amount. To just fathom that in your head, that a million people, more than a million people have seen something you produced is amazing.
But, you know, we do this podcast and 400 people a week listen, and that doesn't sound like a lot. A lot of people wouldn't put this much time into something to reach only 400 people. But, you know, if we could go somewhere and speak in a hall every week to 400 people, that would be... Most people would think that's worthwhile. So... We think it's worthwhile. But
well, and you got to start somewhere. I mean, we've only been doing this how many months now, Mike?
Five.
Not that long.
5 months.
5 months. Once we're 6 months, can't we get on syndicated on Liberty?
But Network? Ian is the one that puts you on it, and he's in jail. So
yeah, but he's going to be out soon. I think.
Is he?
Good behavior. I think he's out in 25-ish days.
I hope
like
so,
that.
And not just for our sake. I mean, definitely for
right.
his. You know.
Just so he can get out of
get
this
out of jail,
hole.
So you can put us on your website. No, that's mean. I'm kidding.
Get out of jail for the fact of you're getting out of jail.
Yeah, but I was kind of intrigued that this got more views of any video in one day than I've ever done that, you know, that I produced. And there's no, the video in it is one still frame. You know, it's a radio ad.
Yeah, yeah. That is amazing. A lot of times I don't put things I've produced up on YouTube for that specific reason because I don't have the time to shoot video for it. But I guess if the audio is good enough and if it's a cool enough message, then go for
it. Well, I'm going to maybe start doing that. I don't know if I'm going to put a whole Freedom Fiends episode up, but for short stuff, it's definitely worth doing that. And it's like, you know, a lot of podcasts go up that same way. It's just the logo for the podcast and the audio. And it reaches a whole nother audience that wouldn't find the podcast.
Yeah, could be something to look into.
I downloaded this new add-on for the podcast for behind the scenes for me to look at the stats that's like really robust, and I can tell, like, you know, thing really weird shit, like that, you know, for instance, David Crow, one of our number one fans, that his podcatcher is set up to check the RSS feed every 75 minutes. I mean, it's creepy. It's like almost spy stuff. But
that's cool.
And I can only tell that because he's a registered user, but...
Okay.
But so I have really robust stats now. I should set you up an account so you can check them too. And so, you know, if I'm in prison, you could put up a podcast or something.
There we go. I could be marked to your Ian.
DJ's squinting at me.
Yeah. I don't think you'll ever be in prison, Michael. You don't leave the house enough.
But the name of this thing, it's such a great name for a stat program for a hip-hop tinged freedom podcast. It's called What's Up.
A little 20 years ago, but okay, I'll get
it. It is about 20 years ago, but it's pretty funny.
What's up? Was that Budweiser commercial that everybody used to do?
Yeah. But it tells you what's up with your listeners.
I dig it. Okay. Is it free?
Yeah. It's free, but it was kind of complicated to add and configure.
That's the cost you pay then.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you paid, someone would come over to your house and install it. But it's on the WordPress site. If you have a WordPress blog or podcast, it's called What's Up. That's our software recommendation for the day.
Word. Speaking of the behind-the-scenes technical stuff, we're going to do a little spec information, let people know how we record things, and have little pictures of us doing our thing. So if you want to know how Freedom Fiends gets recorded, you can go ahead and take a look at that.
Yeah, it'll be when this cast goes up, it'll be another link at the top of the page, and on the side of the page, it'll probably say like how we record or something, and it'll have all of the technical details of how we became the best sounding podcast in the world, and our wives are taking pictures of us podcasting tonight.
Yes, of course. So that's excellent.
And of course, we're wearing our guns because the Second Amendment protects the First Amendment. I'm just speaking in, you know, statist constitutionalist speech, but I don't knock constitutionalists because at least they're headed in the right direction. And it's,
well, I think either statement works. I think they reinforce each other. I mean, if you didn't have the First Amendment, how would you voice your opinion about the Second Amendment? How would you
talk about, if you didn't have the amendments, you'd still have the rights. And before there was an American Second Amendment or Bill of Rights or First Amendment, guns did protect free speech. You know, I saw this amazing thing on TV. We were watching this Nat Geo program, and they had these three guys in Kenya who do this really old school style of hunting where they go out. Was it Ethiopia? They go find lions who've killed something, and they walk up to the lions so, like, unafraid that the lions run away from the kill. They take a machete and chop a chunk of meat off and walk away.
Blew my mind.
And they had bows with them. And this tribe, they showed other stuff with this tribe. And they had AKs, which are illegal in that country to have guns for citizens or tribal people. But I was just thinking, like, who's going to go take AKs away from people that are badass to walk up to a lion and steal some of its dinner?
From those dudes, yeah.
It was like five lions, you know?
Well, if they ever convert to Islam, then the drones will come and do it for them.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's the same philosophy of when you're a kid and you walk into the beer store and just try to play it so cool, like, and confident that, yeah, I can buy this beer and hope they don't card you. I mean, on a smaller scale, it's obviously a matter of degrees. The balls are definitely different sizes, but either way, that's the philosophy I think that stems from, though.
Okay, I want to finish up about this ad we did, and it was also blogged by Mike Vandebau, the guy, you know, the Broken Windows guy, the guy that Rachel Maddow and I think it was Jimmy Carter called a terrorist because he told people to go out and break the windows of the Democratic Party. in their
that
in
guy
their
is that guy. Oh, I didn't know that it was that guy.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, the 3%er blog, Sipsy Street Irregulars.
Okay. Which, of course, we don't obviously condone that type of behavior either.
No, but I follow his site, and I find him a very interesting person, and I don't think he's a bad guy.
Yeah, yeah.
I do agree with his 3% idea, which is basically that the American Revolution was fought by 3% of the population, and he says if they try to take the guns away from here, you know, maybe 40 or 50% of the people will just hand them over, but, and, you know, 20 or 30% of them will bury them or hide them, but 3% of them will go out and use them. You know, and I've also heard the phrase, when it's time to bury your guns, it's time to use them. That's something I read on his site, which we're not going to say we condone or anything, but it's just interesting topics we're discussing.
Well, I could imagine that, you know, quote unquote, Al-Qaeda or the Taliban are probably less than 1% of the people in Afghanistan, or at least less than 10 or 5%. And they've been able to hold off the empire for a decade.
Or, you know, and not that we condone any of these organizations, but just as examples, you know, the IRA is a really small percentage of the population, and they've kept, you know, a major government with a major army at bay for decades.
Right, right. And that brings up another question. I know Republicans always talk about how the troops would never, you know, attack Americans and that kind of stuff could never happen. I don't really know. I mean, you think they would?
Some would be Oath Keepers, but some would. I mean, the National Guard helped with citizen door-to-door disarmament during Katrina, and the National Guard is part of the U.S. military.
Right, right. And I guess it's like General Smedley Butler said, I never had an original thought when I was in the service. So, you know, maybe there are people that are just that drone-like in themselves to being where they give themselves
up. Any military of any nation involves being drone-like, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, you know, for a standing army. You don't really want independent thinkers. You know, you might on a small troop level of sending out five Marines and they have to think on their feet, but what they're being told to do comes from on high, but then they figure out how to do it. But soldiers are not trained to make their own decisions. I mean, they are on a micro level, but not on a platform level or a, you know, goal level.
Right, right.
So speaking of current events, some Republican beat out Wiener for his seat.
You gotta love Wiener. You gotta love Wiener, Michael. Wiener. Beat out Wiener. Yeah, I remember when that whole scandal was happening. I just loved to read the headlines all day long.
Yeah.
Obama hard on Wiener. They're hard on Wiener.
The Republicans are touting this as a victory, but the guy who replaced him is a total Christian Sharian, and he only won on one issue, and it was being pro-Israel, even though he's Christian, not Jewish, but... And Wiener was Jewish, but Wiener was Jewish who, you know, didn't have the agenda of using government guns to protect stolen land on the other side of the world. And Wiener was married to a Muslim, which didn't sit well with the old blue hairs in New York.
Is he really? I had no idea.
Yep.
Wiener is married to a Muslim.
Yep.
Hmm. That's interesting.
You know who Frank Luntz is?
Frank Luntz. Sounds familiar. Go ahead and refresh me.
I'm dedicating our radio ads, you know, our statist PSAs to Frank Luntz. Frank Luntz is the guy who does all the wordsmithing for the Brady campaign as well as the NRA and the Republicans as well as the Democrats. I've been an anti-fan of him for a long time, and he was actually on Colbert recently. Colbert hired him to come on and try to tell him how to pitch his political action committee, and it was just like the most sinister... I mean, he's the guy who came up with, instead of calling it a bailout, calling it a stimulus for Obama, and then for Republicans came up with, instead of calling it global warming, call it climate change. Instead of calling them Ivy League educated, call them elitist, things like that.
Okay, okay. So he's a really smart guy.
He's a really smart guy who's a wordsmith who will teach anybody, regardless of where he stands on the issues, will teach them how to tweak their words to sell their message to people who don't want to read the details.
I guess I can't really hate on that, though. I mean, he's just doing a job.
You can get it.
Well, yeah, I think A, nice work if you can get it, and B, I mean, these kind of organizations would find somebody to do that work for them anyway.
If there were a government propaganda agency making, doesn't matter who you vote for, as long as they expand government, ads like we're making, the copy would be a lot like what we're writing. It's very Frank Luntzian.
Okay, okay. So, good. Dedicate it to him.
Someone said that video should be a training video for the TSA.
I don't know if the TSA is smart enough to learn anything from a training video.
And I got to thank DJ for helping this out a lot. I've made up a new name for her. It's the fiend behind the scenes.
The fiend behind the scenes. I love it.
Yep.
The mysterious third fiend.
The third fiend. The fiend behind the scenes.
Yeah.
All right. I want to talk about the crazy cat spot, because we will protect you bullshit that governments come up with to pass any tyranny they can. It stimulates people's crazy cat spot. You know, it makes them wiggle and lick. Crazy cat spot. Yeah. Now, try this with your cat, those of you at home. About 50 to 70% of all cats have a spot on their body where if you rub it, they will start licking the air.
And yes, my cat, it was my wife's cat, Peanut. He's long gone now, God rest his soul. But I actually found his spot right near his tail, where his spine and his tail sort of met. And
yeah, if you on their back. It's generally about somewhere on their back, on their spine, between two-thirds of the way back and their tail. Although, where is it on Fuzzy? It's on his belly, right?
Yeah. And they'll just launch their heads into the air, wave them side to side, and just start licking wildly at the air.
Yep.
And there's no way they can stop if you're doing that. And my wife used to always say, oh, you broke him. I would break him whenever I felt like it.
So, yeah, the we will protect you bullshit stimulates people's crazy cat spot.
I luckily don't have one. I'm one of the 30% of the cats that don't have a crazy cat spot.
Yeah. For statism, for protection.
I roll my eyes. Maybe you have to not have a crazy cat spot to be a libertarian or an anarchist or an anti-statist of any stripe, because it seems like a lot of people, when they hear the magic words like safety or for your safety or security or fight for freedoms, all those kinds of Lutzian things, they have their crazy cat spot. They start putting their hands over their hearts or waving a flag or giving all their money to the government or whatever you do.
Well, Ron Paul said something, I'm paraphrasing, but it's something like, you know, if full-on tyranny ever hits America, it's going to be a cross wrapped in a flag.
Was that Ron Paul, or is that sort of a paraphrase of...
I've seen it attributed to Ron Paul, but... Let's take a break here, and people can go rub their cats and look for the crazy cat spot, and then we'll come back and talk about incrementalism.
Rub their pussies and look up their wieners.
Yes. All right. What's up? I was thinking that sounded really hip and hip-hop, and but you said it's like 10 years old?
I think I said it was like 20 years old. I don't know. It's probably somewhere in between if you split the difference.
Is it whack?
It's totally whack, homie G-dog.
Homie dog. What's some more hip-hop vernacular from the 80s?
I don't even know, man. I was 6 years old in the 80s.
I don't even know.
You know more than me.
I know more than you. Well, you know, I don't know 80s. what Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five and Dougie Fresh said about things back then.
Yeah. I do know that Grandmaster Flash was awesome.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, Grandmaster, I was trying to think of the derivation of that. I was thinking it was like a karate term, and I was thinking it like he was predating the Wu-Tang Clan with having the martial arts fascination. But then I looked it up, and it's a chess term. A grandmaster is an expert chess player.
Ah, okay. Hip-hop does have a little bit of a fascination with chess, too. Jay-Z likes to make, or he used to in his old days, like to make chess references.
Huh.
Yeah. He says he's the Bobby Fischer of rap.
He's the Bobby Fischer of rap.
Yeah.
You're the Deep Blue of rap.
Am I?
You know who Deep Blue is?
I thought Deep Blue was like a robot that could beat people at chess. I don't even know if he was fictional or not.
Deep Blue was not fictional. It was the IBM computer that beat the world chess championship in the 80s. I don't know.
Was that the first triumph of machine over man?
Yeah. Yeah, and then they used Deep Blue to make the drones, I think, for the second triumph of machine over man.
Of course.
So I was thinking about our ongoing talk about cats bringing you dead animals, and I was thinking about this person I used to know, this woman, hippie woman in San Francisco, who was a total save the whales animal lover type, tree hugger, but she had her cat declawed because she didn't like that her cat had an animal nature. And I was thinking yeah, peaceful lady, how would you like it if I held you down and ripped out your fingernails by the root?
Right. That kind of stuff bugs me a lot. What else bugs me a lot, and I hope my wife doesn't hear this, but is the whole neutering and spaying thing. I mean, I get that from a sort of social planning against animals kind of thing, you know, it keeps them from being a million starving kittens. Yeah. But to me, an organism's, one of its basic rights, one of the most important things, one of the most meaningful parts of life is the ability to reproduce. That's what all life is trying to do. That's
is your
almost
dog
the
fixed?
Purpose of life. My dog is fixed, but not by my choice. The shelter had him fixed before I got him. If I had the choice, I wouldn't want him fixed. I'm really sad now because I know, yeah, he behaves better. He's more docile. He's less of a handful. But I just look at him and I'm kind of sad because he'll never have pups. And
I can see that point. But first of all, neutering, it may make them more compliant on a day-to-day basis, but I don't believe it harms them. Like, they don't walk around going, I'm missing my balls. And Peanut still tries to fuck Fuzzy. They still have a dick, and they still can fuck. But
I just see an inconsistency there. If you're
with declawing, after a cat's declawed, every step it takes for the rest of its life, it's in pain.
Yes, I do know that. I'm not trying to make, I think it is a level of degrees, but I think the principle is the same for me at least. I mean, I think declawing is more horrible.
If I lived in a farm, I wouldn't fix cats, but I would not live with cats that aren't fixed. Have you ever been around cats that are not fixed? You wouldn't be able to sleep, and they would be your house would smell like cat pee, and they would go, meow, constantly, and you would not get a moment's peace. So I wouldn't have cats that aren't fixed.
Yeah, but I don't know if I would either. But I think there's an inconsistency there as far as nature goes. If you're going to want to voice your opinion for animal rights, I don't see how you can mutilate them and still claim to be a proponent of animal rights. I mean, I'm not an animal rights guy myself, so maybe I'm missing the point. And, you know, our listeners can email me or Facebook message me if I'm missing the point here. But I kind of feel like there is an inconsistency there. And if you don't want to mutilate animals and you don't want animals to be declawed or have things tested on them, then why is it okay to rip out their genitals?
So my tyranny today for this week. Oh, you know, Fox News' Bret Baier show now has a daily Tyranny Today segment. It's called Regulation Nation. And they have, like, you know, interviews with farmers that are having to deal with the FDA and can't make money because they're spending too much time filling out paperwork and have to write down every load of manure and tag and chip every animal. You know, part of like that UN agenda, is it 21? UN agenda something is involved with controlling farms too. So incrementalism could work, reducing freedom or bringing freedom. I was talking to a friend recently who's a truck driver. You know, he's not a long-haul truck driver. He goes from, like, Wyoming to Montana and down to Colorado regularly with a semi-truck. Okay. And he said that the feds are basically trying to get it to the point where private truckers won't exist and you have to work for a big company that obeys all the rules. They're trying to put all sorts of monitoring devices in all the trucks and GPS that transmits. Ugh. And they're even trying to put they're trying to turn every truck into a mobile weather station. They're saying it so they can have more accurate pinpoint weather readings all over the country.
But it would also track wherever you were.
Yeah. And, you know, they put in one thing and then they might add another thing of, like, you know,
yeah,
testing your brain waves or something. Who knows? But so I had a tyranny today this week.
And now the NEMA News with Nima Vidati.
And now for your daily dose of nanny statism in our daily segment, Tyranny Today.
Tyranny Today.
Friday morning, I woke up and there were men digging in my yard.
That is horrible. I'm surprised. Did you grab your gun when you first realized that? Or what'd you do?
I could see that it was people from the city and I had a gun in my pocket, of course. I always do. But I went out to talk to them and was polite. And it wasn't like they had pickaxes and were in the middle of the yard digging a hole. They were like at the edge of the sidewalk. You know, it is our property, but it's where our water line meets the city water line.
Yeah.
And I asked them what they were doing, and they said that a lady who walks by here regularly, who works for the city, had called them because she'd seen water on the surface where it was leaking up. And I'm thinking,
is that true? Was there water on the surface?
I guess there was, because they dug a hole 8 feet deep down to where where our pipe meets their pipe, and I could see water leaking in.
Okay.
You know, and if it's on their side of the pipe, they have to fix it. If it's on our side of the pipe, we have to fix it. And it was definitely on our side of the pipe.
Okay.
So, I mean, it was something that had to be dealt with anyway, because water was spilling out. It's actually before it's metered. You know, it's like their water at that point. The meter's in the house when it hits the house. But
so they were losing water on it, or
yeah,
you were?
Yeah, they were.
Okay.
I think we were losing a little water pressure. I'd noticed our pressure was down a little bit. But they said, you have 3 days to take care of this. And I said, or what? And they said, or we turn your water off.
take care of it how? I mean.
And I said, it's Friday, man. I don't know if I can get a plumber here over the weekend. And they're like, well, make some calls now. If you call me Monday and say you've got an appointment with a plumber for the next week, that'll do. But, and I was thinking, okay, so you have a monopoly on this tube of fluoridated water coming into my house, and our water is fluoridated. And, you know, fluorine is an active component in Prozac. Yeah, so it's supposed to make you more compliant and calm, but I don't think it's working on me.
Well, you're always drinking milk.
Yeah.
Although, yeah. I guess you drink a lot of coffee, too, which you make with your
city. Yeah, but we filter that, so it probably takes...
I thought Casper wasn't fluoridated.
No, it is. I looked it up. It started like a couple years ago, or a year ago.
Ah, okay.
And, you know, it's That's the crazy cat spot people saying, we need this.
Right. What would the children do? The poor children's teeth would fall out of their heads if the government didn't force feed us this chemical.
They don't need to force feed it to us because it's in toothpaste already. And really, fluorine is only useful as an additive.
Fluoride. It's fluoride, right?
Yeah.
Right.
It's only useful when your teeth are growing in. So it's like screwing up every adult's teeth and, you know, maybe affecting our biochemistry and our brains. So the kids that can't afford toothpaste don't have cavities.
Not only that, but some federal agency, I forget who it was, but some federal agency, which is a government agency, actually did a study that showed that in a lot of municipalities, there was too much fluoride in the water.
And it's harmful and it pits your teeth.
It was causing kids to have bumps on their teeth, which is not a good thing. Obviously not protecting you, obviously making your life worse. In the newsroom, and we got a report, and I did a little tiny news piece on it about how some federal agency had said that there, in a lot of municipalities, there was slightly too much fluoride, okay, and it was actually causing growths on kids' teeth.
So anyway, the whole thing kind of pissed me off. Like, it would not piss me off if a neighbor came to me and said, hey, your water's leaking, maybe you should call a plumber, you know? And the fact that the city said, you have 3 days or we turn off this monopoly fluoride tube coming into your house, because Wyoming is a tube-based economy. We've decided that there's tubes everywhere. When you're on the highway here, there's all sorts of tubes on trucks. It's a tube-based economy. So and I don't really know how in LibPair non-monopolies would work with things that are delivered physically to every home. You know, like, it'd be easy with cable internet because you can send so much bandwidth over one cable, but, you know, would you have 5 sets of water pipes running through the street?
Well, would things even develop that way? I mean, or would more people just have wells?
Yeah.
You know, when I think of LibPair, I think it's almost like, you know, what science fiction writers say about aliens. You know, they wouldn't necessarily even be anything that we might recognize as being anything similar to any kind of human being or anything like that. It wouldn't be like aliens on Star Trek.
It might be an intelligent gas.
Yeah, things that completely we would never even imagine or think of. Yeah. I think that's what LibPair's like. I mean, who knows how water would be delivered, but it could be wells. I don't think it would be just a slight change from our current system. I think there would be much more imaginative things.
So I utilized the power of competition and called 6 different plumbers. And the cheapest one that had good recommendations on one of those sites that I went to said it'd be about $1,300. And basically what they had to do was dig... because they didn't know where it was. They said, well, we could just charge you $800 or $900 and dig a hole where we think it is. But if it's not there, we have to keep digging holes. And what you really should do is replace the whole pipe, because it's probably original from when this house was built in 59. And 4 other people have had this replaced on this street. You should just replace it with a plastic tube, because if we just fix the hole in 5 years, you're going to have another hole. So we opted for that. And they were here 2 days, and it ended up costing $1,450 because they had to rent a jackhammer when they ran into buried concrete up near our house. So, you know, for 2 days I was in the house with people using heavy machinery and concrete. I mean, it looked like they were ripping up and it looked like they were raping our yard, and it was unsettling. And like in the house, you know, I was in my room with the door shut with earplugs and gun ears on, and it was still really loud. They were jackhammering concrete attached to the foundation of the house. But they did a great job, and, you know, I mean, that would have cost twice as much in California. And
right. And they did it over the weekend, and
yeah.
I'm guessing they were friendly. And
they were totally friendly, man. And we got a new microwave, because our microwave died the same week. And
you had a bad week.
I know, money-wise. And the people we bought it from Best Buy don't install. And we didn't have money to get it. We had to get it on our... The only credit card we have is a Best Buy card. For some reason, we kept that when we canceled everything else. So we got it at Best Buy, but they don't install them. And it's like one of those hanging models that, you know, you have to drill holes for. Ugh. And these guys came in and did it for me for free. They did it for me for free. And I ended up paying them $15 each. You know, it took them a half hour, and it was a lot of hard work and physical work. And I was like, God, I got to give you guys something. And
was this the Geek Squad? Is the Geek Squad also responsible for microwaves?
No, this was the guys that were fixing the plumbing out front.
Oh. Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's like above awesome and beyond, guys. Man. Most places. Yeah, I mean, that's really how friendly Wyoming is and how the workers don't slack. And it was kind of funny, too. The city workers, they sent three guys, and it was like two guys digging holes and one guy just chatting on his cell phone.
Right, just standing there. Yeah.
Yeah, supervising.
And he probably gets paid three times more than the two guys. Yeah, he's the supervisor.
And then the private sector guys I hired, they sent two guys and they worked their fucking asses off.
Yep, yep. And they didn't need a supervisor to just stand there. Because why are you going to pay some guy $90,000 to just stand there in the free market? Yep. If it's your money, you're not going to waste money on some guy to just stand there.
Yep. So let's talk about minarchy and incrementalism, because I've had a few questions about this. You know, basically, I'm a minarchist before my coffee and an anarchist after my coffee. And you're pretty much an anarchist all the time. But we do talk about constitutional issues on here, because I would be a lot happier if they just enforced the Constitution. It's not my lib pair, but, you know, the world would be America would be a much better place.
I don't even know if it was just the Constitution. I mean, maybe just the original Bill of Rights.
The Bill of Rights.
Plus freedom of ingestion. I could go for that.
Yeah.
That would be better than what it is now. I don't want that to be the final resting place, but that would be better.
Yeah. But Mike DeLuna had a good devil's advocate statement at my minarchy. He said, "It should be noticed that you can't follow the non-aggression principle and be a minarchist. That's like saying you follow the Ten Commandments, but once a year you like to go kill somebody."
That is a very good point, Mike DeLuna, and I really love that when I read that in the notes. And what do you think of that, Michael? I mean, if you're a minarchist in the morning, does that mean you're – because you haven't had your coffee and you're not a morning person, so you're not going to follow the non-aggression principle?
No, it's more like – I mean, it's kind of a joke, but it's more like when I'm feeling really feisty and full of myself, I'm like, I'm an anarchist. And when I'm kind of calm and relaxed, I'm like, well, a small amount of government is a good idea because blah, 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 blah. And my answer to Mike DeLuna was, in my lib pair, there'd be no violation of the zero aggression principle because people would be able to opt out of the minarchy.
Right. If people could opt out, I mean, there's an idea I've heard before called panarchy, which is, you know, you get to choose whatever government you want to choose. And if you want to live in a communist commune, that's fine. The problem is, I don't know if that works in the real world. Maybe it does. Maybe it doesn't. The other thing about, I guess, minarchy and what I've thought of before is, I mean, when you think about government, what are the parts that are violating the non-aggression principle? And it's mostly taxes and then, you know, obviously the monopoly of force with regards to police and the military. So if you had some voluntary way of funding it, like I think we've talked – I don't know if we've talked on the podcast about it, but I know we've talked personally about how lotteries could fund government programs if
you wanted. Well, they say lotteries are the only taxes that are voluntary.
Well, exactly. I think there's nothing wrong with – a lottery, and I have no problem. I mean, that's basically – I mean, I have nothing wrong with casinos. I have nothing wrong with a lottery.
And I guess that, like, voluntarily paying dues to an organization might be a voluntary tax, but it's really not because everybody in the organization gets some sort of service from that, and from a lottery, only one person gets a really big service from it. But I guess you get the service of hope when you play a lottery. But I think that in a minarchist opt-out – society, you know, a lib pair of minarchy, there would be things similar to my town's city water system, but you'd be able to opt out. You know, I don't even know if I could opt out. Like, if I just called up the city and said, you know, I don't want to pay for the service anymore, I'm going to truck my water in. I could probably do that, but I probably couldn't legally dig a well in town.
Right, right. And I don't even know if you could legally do what you mentioned earlier in the city. You might be able to do it in the county if you didn't live in the city part. Tell them to just shut your water off. There might be some kind of requirement that you have to.
Yeah, they might make you have water. And, you know, there might be different reasons for that. One, they might say it's because everybody has to participate or we can't afford to do this, you know, the rule of the commons thing. Or it might be a thing of, well, we don't want your house being a stinking cesspool filled with people that don't bathe. You know, yeah. it might be a public health concern to them, but
theoretically they could condemn your house for a number of health reasons.
Which goes on to the thing of like people don't really own private property in America anymore.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that. And the worst part about this misconception of private property in modern America, I think, is property taxes. How can you own something if you have to pay rent on it every year? And if you don't, it is unquestioned that it will be seized from you and sold to somebody else at auction for much less than it's worth. Well, I guess it's an auction, so it could go for as much or more, but generally less.
I've even heard constitutionalists condemn property tax by saying – it's fine to tax money coming, it's fine to tax money going, but it's immoral to tax it when it's sitting there.
I mean, obviously you know my stance on taxes, so I think you have to take the principled stand that taking money from somebody is always wrong.
Yeah, I'm just intrigued that even people who think there should be some government have complaints about property taxes.
Right, right. I don't know. I guess I'd be interested to hear more on – I mean, okay, so why is it okay – if it's okay to take money from people if it's going somewhere or coming somewhere, I guess I don't get that from them, and maybe it's because I'm not a constitutionalist. But
I like that we cover the full gamut of liberty ideas. You know, I mean, there's a lot of – that's probably why people like us. There's a lot of podcasts that only talk about anarchy, and anything that's not anarchy is immoral, and we can't even mention it. And that's why I guess I say I'm a minarchist before my coffee and an anarchist after. Personally, as someone who's actually paying property taxes for the first time in my life, you know, for the past year, we don't really own a house. The bank owns the house and we pay him every month until we own it. And then the government could still take it if we turn our water off someday. But
you know, that's a good point, too. How come the bank doesn't pay the damn property taxes? Or even it's apportioned by how much equity you have in it. How come you don't pay 10% and they pay 90%?
Actually, the way it's set up, though, is they do pay it. You pay it, but they pay it and the homeowner's insurance out of your mortgage to make sure it gets paid because they don't want to be stuck having it seized. So it's part of the agreement. It's in your – that's how they structure it. But personally, as someone who's paying property taxes for the first time in their life, I have a big problem with it in that – a bulk of what it's used for is funding public schools, and I don't have any kids, and I hate the idea of public schools.
Right. Which to me brings up another problem with taxes, and I think anybody can wrap their heads around this. This is sort of the entryway to disliking or figuring out what's wrong with taxation. To me, one of the ways you can look at taxes that I think everybody can understand and realize and maybe start to think, hey, maybe something's really, really wrong with the system of taxing in general, is everybody's taxes go to something they don't like. Whether you're a Democrat, whether you're a Republican, whether you're a Libertarian, no matter what, something that you're paying for, something that you're being forced to pay for, you disagree with. So how come we can't all get together and say, well, let's stop being taxed? If you're a war-hating liberal, part of your money is going to murder citizens in Palestine or wherever.
And if you know, in that system, if you wanted to fund that military, you could. And if you wanted to fund the inner city school public system, you know, a system for schools for people who couldn't pay for them, you could. And you'd have a lot more money to do it. And people would have, I think things would run more smoothly. They wouldn't at first. And that's why I want to talk about incrementalism.
Okay.
Incrementalism can be used to reduce freedoms or to bring freedoms about. Now, a way they're used to reduce freedoms are gun control is incremental disarmament.
Right.
You know, they can't just take all the guns away overnight because people would use them. So it's kind of the frog in explain the frog in the boiling water theory.
Well, everybody knows that one. That's just, and I don't even know if it's really true in real life, but it's the idea that you put a frog in lukewarm water and then you put the pot on the stove and you turn the heat on. The frog starts to boil and doesn't even know because it happens so slowly. So he's just sitting there, eventually stews in his own juices and becomes a tasty stew.
Yeah. And people use that analogy a lot for things like incremental gun control or incremental socialization of healthcare or things like that. I mean, the U.S. government has been socializing and governmentizing healthcare for 50 or 60 or 70 or 80 years. But the Obama thing really got people's hackles up because it was a lot in one swoop.
Right.
And gun control, you know, I mean, in 1930, you could buy a machine gun out of the Sears catalog through the mail. And the first gun control laws were racially based. Actually, the first gun control laws were before the 30s. They were, you know, Jim Crow laws to keep blacks from having them in 1860. But it just went from there. There were some grand sweeping ones, like there was one after JFK was killed that outlawed the manufacture of new machine guns for civilians in America, basically machine guns cost 15 grand more than semi-autos of the same gun because there's a very limited amount of them. It's only ones that existed before that.
Right, right.
You know, and we've talked about this before, the government gets the full auto versions for like $5 more than they get the semi-auto versions for, because they're the government.
They're the government. They have the monopoly. And the incrementalism, yeah, it really is really effective from a government standpoint, because they do things so slowly that the new generation or the new set of kids, they don't remember the time when things are freer. And so for them to go back a few years is just inconceivable to them. There's only one direction to go. I like how Ron Paul talks about this with regard to government spending a lot. You know, he basically says all we'd have to do to cut the budget in half is go back to like 2003. Or maybe it's 2006, but he does it in a few of his books where all you have to do is go back 10 years and the government was half the size it is now. But nobody remembers, yeah, that.
And people think Ron Paul's crazy for suggesting that, you know, maybe people could keep more of their money and put it where they want to. And everyone's got – a majority of people now have this feeling that the government has to take care of my role. You know, like the Republican who just got elected on the basis of I will look stick up for Israel. You know, and it's a largely Jewish district of old people, and they all said, oh, that's our guy, even though they were people who were mainly registered Democrat. They voted for a Republican. You know, it goes back to that crazy cat spot being stimulated of, oh, that's our guy. He touches our issue. When really, the only sensible, basically, the thing that I said about moderates are people who want everything to be a little illegal, and they want their cause to be taken care of, and they'll put up with someone else's cause that they hate being taken care of a little. And it just makes everybody equally unhappy.
Yeah.
Whereas a more libertarian aspect, even within a constitutional framework, not a libpair anarchist one, but within the Ron Paul idea, you know, his thing is, hey, go back to just letting people do their own thing and the government takes care of their interstate highways and the military and international treaties, and that's about it. And people think Ron Paul's crazy for that. I saw him on who's the guy that that interviewed our buddy after he open carried at the presidential event, William Kostrick, the guy that was calling him crazy.
Can't remember his name. MSNBC guy?
Well, yeah. I saw an interview of him with Ron Paul recently, and he was like...
Chris Matthews?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, the guy with the funny hair that looks like the You're Fired guy. What's his name?
Donald President. Trump.
Yeah, he has
Chris
the Donald
Matthews
Trump
and
hair.
Donald Trump. Kind of. Okay, I can see that.
He has a beast on his head.
Yeah.
But Matthews was talking to Ron Paul and like, well, sir, I mean, Chris Matthews is an asshole, but he's kind of funny. I mean, some of the phraseology he uses. I remember when he said to William Kostrick, why did you carry a loaded gun to see the president? And Kostrick started in with like, well, in New Hampshire, you can legally, and Chris Matthews interrupted him and said, I know the law. You can chew gum in church, but that doesn't mean you should do it. And I'm like, that's kind of a... I've never heard that, but I like it, even though he's an idiot. It's funny.
Yeah.
You can chew gum in church. But, you know, he said to Ron Paul, well, you know, when I was 20 years old, I backed Barry Goldwater and believed in his ideals, but then I grew up. There was a really cogent comment on that on Facebook from one of our friends or fans. He said that it's as if saying that adopting statism is a rite of passage.
You know, maybe there's something to be said about that, though, because in our society these days, where everything is so statist, every industry is heavily government regulated, you know, it's almost like to be a real grown-up these days, you have to buy into the system somehow. Or you have to be such a great entrepreneur that you're able to make your own money and live out in Wyoming on some land and not have to worry about it.
Well, I look at it the opposite way. I look at it as I used to be statist and then I grew up, you know, because I think that thinking the government is this fairy godmother who's going to solve all the problems so you don't have to, I think that's a very immature, childish attitude.
It depends on your definition of growing up. I mean, if you're saying by growing up that means joining the majority ranks of adult society these days, then it means becoming more statist. I think if you're talking about growing up in terms of being philosophically enlightened, then you're talking about what you're talking about. And that's the kind of growing up I am, but... You know,
we've said before that even from a financial or mathematical aspect, an 8-year-old with an allowance understands economics better than the president and his cabinet, any president and his cabinet, because they all think that you can spend more than you take in and it'll all just work out somehow.
Right, right. Well, they say things like they're going to invest and inject money into the economy without tipping their hand that they first have to suck that money out of the economy.
Yeah, we want to take the fat out of the ass and put it into a vein.
Yeah, literally. Which is just disgusting, but for some reason, to be a grown-up in Chris Matthews' view, or in the view of most people that are grown up these days, that makes perfect sense, you know?
So the reason I'm a minarchist sometimes is because I don't really see how we would get to LibPair without a gradual movement toward it, you know, which includes a lot of educating young people to not be statist and trust the government that it can solve all your problems like a fairy godmother.
I can see that argument with respect to the fact that I think if you do go cold turkey, there's going to be a year or maybe 5 years of things that are really crazy.
Well, you want to make an omelet, you got to break some eggs. And, you know, it's like there's only three ways I could see getting there. Incrementalism, revolution, or collapse. And revolution and collapse, I don't really know would work at this point, you know, because I think that the American Revolution was kind of a fluke of courage and luck and situation. It was like a lot of damn courage for sure, but it was also like fighting an army that's largely based across an ocean that takes 3 weeks to cross. Whereas today, it'd be like they'd fucking drone you in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, it really wouldn't be a revolution. It'd be more like 1,000 ruby ridges, probably. But, you know, which might make people back off. They might just go, okay.
Not only that, but even if you win, I mean, look at modern revolutions. The people don't end up getting what they want. I mean, even in Egypt.
They end up getting Al-Qaeda in charge, like in Libya. Oh, by the way, did you read about the American soldier shooting the journalist 11 times last week?
I did, actually. I read the article, and, you know, I wasn't there. I didn't see it, but I could see the Department of the Defense angle that, you know, the soldier might have thought this guy was some type of suicide bomber. I could see that.
Why? Because he had a bulletproof vest on and he was brown?
He had a bulletproof vest on. He was brown. I mean, when you're a journalist, you have lots of equipment, which has wires.
Yeah.
I could see being mistaken for something.
Well, people have confused cameras for guns or rocket launchers and shot people. And the other thing is there are now U.S. boots on the ground in Libya, which Obama promised wouldn't happen like 2 months
ago.
Well,
I knew there have been spooks on the ground basically from day one, that from what I've heard.
But now there's boots on, there's troops on the ground.
Are you literal American troops, not CIA agents?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Right. Not many of them, but they're there.
Oh.
But
I hadn't read that
yet. So, yeah, I mean, but modern revolutions, you know, people so want statism that they topple one statist government and pull in another. So there's revolution, there's collapse, and there's incrementalism. And collapse, I mean, a lot of people that I've chatted with are hoping for that. You know, they're uber preppers. They have a year's worth of food, water, medical supplies, ammo, etc. And they're happy when things go bad because they think that everything's going to collapse and then they can be Rambo and they can conquer the post-apocalyptic landscape and rule their own 40 acres of it or something.
It's a nice fantasy. I could see people wanting that to happen.
It sounds bloody and horrible.
Well, it depends on where you're at. I mean, if you live out in the middle of nowhere in Wyoming, I could see it not being that bloody or horrible.
Well, it would be a lot less bloody and horrible in my neighborhood than it would be in my old neighborhoods in L.A., for sure. You know, the power goes out for 3 days in L.A., and people loot and walk around and shoot each other. But,
yeah. I don't know. As far as collapse goes, I mean, there's going to be some type of collapse. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be end of the world, there's no electricity kind of collapse.
It's incremental collapse. And in modern societies, even when things collapse, like they did with the looting in England recently, the government just comes in and truncheons everybody.
Right, right. Well, I still think there's going to be some type of currency collapse. And I've heard that, you know, when there is hyperinflation, in a lot of cases, it doesn't last that long. The government somehow reissues currency or issues a new currency or somehow manipulates it to where, you know, after a year, people have a new type of currency or they drop a zero or what have you. So I don't know if we're headed for that kind of currency collapse, but I do know that the American dollar, the monetary system as it stands now, isn't going to last for much longer.
Boston Tea Party has an interesting comment about that. I mean, he's been encouraging people to buy gold for 15 years in print, but he also said that if the dollar collapsed, people would probably still use dollars as money because they're familiar.
Yeah.
and they have a set value in your mind. That happened in the Weimar Republic. I mean, there was hyperinflation, but people still used the old money as money, you know. And I remember I was in Germany right after the wall collapsed, touring with my band Bomb, and East Germany was open up. Like, we didn't play in East Germany, but we went through it, and we'd stop for food, and everybody was trying to give us change of East German money because it was worthless.
Yeah.
But people were still using it, too. Like, people would still take it in a few places, even though it was literally worth just the metal, you know, the tin it was putting
on. Well, that's Gershom's law, right? When you have bad money in the system, that's the money you're going to spend because you want to get rid of it.
Yeah.
You don't want to hold on to it. Why are you going to save the crap money? So that's going to be the money people are exchanging with.
So talk about incrementalism and how it could work for good. I mean, I think the fact that Ron Paul is bigger than ever is a good sign for incrementalism.
It's a really good sign. I mean, I think he's been our freedom fix for a long time, and I don't even know if we want to play the jingle because it's just Ron Paul's steadily...
It should be Ron Paul today.
Maybe.
I was incorrect on the GOP debates last week. I said that he only was asked one question at the end. I didn't know those things were... I forgot they were 2 or 3 hours, and I came in like 50 minutes before the end, 45 or 50 minutes, so I thought it was just 1 hour. I saw a montage on YouTube of all his questions and answers, and he was great.
He was great.
And he answered a bunch of them.
He was better this time. I think he was a lot better this time.
One of my favorites was his comment on immigration. He said, "Barbed wire fences with machine guns don't seem very American to me. Take away the incentives and giveaways." And, you know, the obvious thing DJ and I thought was, yeah, it doesn't seem very American. It seems East German,
yeah.
Or Russian.
It totally is. And the other point he made there that I thought was really smart was, you know, at some point, that can work both ways. Those could be used to keep people in case of a collapse.
Yeah.
And people called him crazy for it, but that's exactly what they were used as in East Germany,
it's happened
in
a lot of countries.
Yeah, yeah. And it reminded me of an old Goody Mob song, which before it was a CeeLo line. Before CeeLo was, you know, Mr. Gnarls Barkley pop star, he had a line about living in a gated community. And he says every now and then he wonders if those gates were put up to keep crime out or keep our ass in. And...
Oh, there's a Dead Kennedy song I love called Forest Fire about some hippie tripping on berries or mushrooms in the woods and then going, "I think I'll start a forest fire." And it's about like a forest fire in Marin in the really rich hippie section. And he's like, "But your windows and doors are locked because your burglar alarms went off. And we laughed your lives. But where's your brand new pretty wife? She might still be inside. Either save her or your cocaine from the fire."
Right.
And then it's like, "Windows covered with bars. Fences barked with barbed wire. Is that a house or a prison? How are you going to get out?" That's a forest fire climbing the hill. Better watch the California hoes. Better ride from the fire. But some of us stay to watch. And we think of your insurance cost. And we laugh at your life. Windows covered with bars. Is that a house or a fortress? Is this the rest of the world? It was a couple of bars. Sticky or any guard? Is that a house or a prison? How you gonna get out? A drink bowl and your dinner's cooked. Big sports cars and your boats. Getting fried, dried by the fire. With a couple of bars. Five bites for the yard. It's a pleasure to watch you. Watch it all melt. But hey, what about the cocaine? Stop out of the basement. Be here and save it. Yeah, you're gonna need it. With a brand new pretty wife, she might still be inside. Either save her or your cocaine from the fire. But the doors and doors are locked. Took a break when the alarms are off. Ever wonder why we laugh at your life? When it's covered with bars. Never looked so helpless. Hang up the flames. Cameras watching the walls. Don't forget the doors. Now you're trapped in your prison. How you gonna get out? Yeah! See the girl go run, 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 run,
run. I don't know, and there's some people in the Liberty Movement that hate on Ron Paul that I still respect and love, like Stefan Molyneux. But I do think that Ron Paul is really an anarchist. I don't think he's a minarchist in his heart.
Oh, he said he was an anarchist to the Liberty on Tour guys.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, we talked about that before. They drive around the country in a van solving mysteries.
Ah, yes. I don't know what their name is. But I know who
Liberty
you're talking
about. Liberty on Tour, I think. Yeah, it's Pete Eyre and a few other people, and they open carry around the country and drink beers in parking lots and get arrested. I like
them. But the thing is that Ron Paul, he's not going to come out and say he's an anarchist right now. He would get eaten alive. But yeah. I think I think that's probably one of the reasons he doesn't want to be in Congress anymore.
Well, you know, he doesn't have to say it. MSNBC will say it. He's an anarchist, you know, but it goes back to that, like, a vote for Bart is a vote for anarchy. And then Bart says, a vote for Bart is a vote for anarchy.
Yeah, and he wins.
Ron Paul missed a golden opportunity when he was asked about Reagan last week. He could have said, when I first backed Reagan, Michelle Bachmann and Rick Perry were Democrats at that time.
Yeah, I think he can make his whole Reagan connection a lot stronger. I mean, Rick Perry was attacking him on the fact that, you know, he wrote a letter saying he was getting out of the GOP because of basically Reagan's policies. But at the same time, Ron Paul does say, hey, I was an original backer of Reagan. Well, it's so simple of a concept to say that, hey, I backed Reagan before he got elected because he said all these amazingly libertarian things. He had a good talk. Yeah. But then once he was in office, he grew the government and he grew the military.
One of our running jokes is him saying the most horrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help you, which we love. We think it's a great line and we use it as a joke in the movie and the podcast and in these commercials we're making. But, you know, it's ironic coming from the guy who militarized the drug war and had his wife sitting on a tank in South Central for a photo op.
Well, he talked a good talk, and for the past, well, forever, that's all politicians have to do is tell people what they want to hear. They can do whatever the hell they want, and people don't notice. As long as they say the right buzzwords and itch that crazy cat spot, that's all people care about.
I'm going to add that to the glossary, crazy cat spot.
And I used to say that Obama was almost the liberal version of Reagan because he told all the liberals exactly what they wanted to hear, and then he gets in the government, and he's basically Bush 3.
Well, you've seen that video. Obama's going to pay my mortgage.
Yeah, right? And where's he going to pay it from? I don't know. His stash or something.
Yeah. It's some black lady right after he was elected, like, in the streets cheering and saying Obama's going to pay my rent or my mortgage. And it's really funny.
Yeah.
We got to talk sometime about the video. Have you seen the video of the guys at the Colbert and Stewart rally in D.C. with the sign that says, Obama is a Keynesian?
Yes, and then everybody's all angry coming up to him. No, he's not a Keynesian. He's an American.
He's not from Kenya. Yeah.
Yeah.
Those people could vote. That's kind of scary. But so let's talk about the kids' book about pot, and then I want to close with talk a little more about the commercial we made and the ridiculous reactions to it.
Yes.
So there's a kids' book about pot. It's called It's Just a Plant. And it's not telling kids to smoke pot, but it's an illustrated book for children basically saying, when mommies and daddies love each other very much, they smoke this stuff and it makes them feel better. And, you know, it covers industrial hemp and it covers medicinal use also, but it also covers recreational use and it's for kids.
Yeah, and it's genius. And he goes to a doctor and the doctor tells him that, you know, several people do choose to smoke marijuana, like doctors and lawyers and even some judges. And the guy who illustrated it, he's also, you might know him from another famous children's book that's not really for children called Please Go the Fuck to Sleep, which was very famous among lots of circles. It was basically written for parents who obviously have a problem with a kid going to sleep. Because, I mean, I don't have kids yet, but apparently that's one of the big issues that parents face.
I'm not going to beep out the title because it's a title.
It's a title, sure.
You know, we beep out exclamative use, you know, if we're cussing. Like, yeah, that's f***ing crazy.
It's fair use if we're talking about somebody else's quote or a title, right?
It's not obscenity. Yeah. It's not obscenity under any... except the most Christian Sharia of definitions.
Fair enough.
So go on about this wonderful author.
Well, it's actually the illustrator. The same illustrator who illustrated the pot book also illustrated the Please Go to the Fuck to Sleep. And if you go to Amazon and click on the illustrator's name, which I forget, but maybe you'll post it, it actually brings you to another book. And I don't know if this is what he's working on now because it was just a black and white page and it was like $900 and there was no reviews. So this might be a project in the works. But it was called I Don't Want to Blow You Up. And it was pictures of basically a Muslim family. So very excited to see what comes out of this next book from this amazing illustrator.
Well, are you sure it's not an old book that's out of print? Usually when books are $900 on Amazon, it's because they're out of print.
Maybe, but it didn't mention it on the Wikipedia page about him. And it did mention the other two. And so I don't know. And also, if it was out of print, I imagine somebody would have read it at some point, and especially a book with such a controversial subject and title
would have reviewed it.
And it was almost the anti-book to that coloring book about 9/11 that I don't know if we talked about before, where it basically had the picture, the cartoonish picture of the guy shooting Osama bin Laden as he grabbed his wife, who looked like a cartoon version of Jasmine, but with the whole burqa on to throw in front of the bullet.
So I want to close up with, we're going to talk about wealth production and define it and talk about how it helps everyone. And we'll talk about corporatism versus capitalism.
Wealth production is a very good topic because I have some liberal friends, and this is how they explain the economy to their other friends. They say, you want to know how the economy works? It's like a pack of cigarettes. I have a pack of cigarettes, and if I take four out, then there's only 16 left, and there's only so many cigarettes in the economy. And so you have these big Republicans that are taking all the cigarettes, and then we only get one cigarette. And I'm like, no, that's not how it works. That's not how it is. You can grow tobacco. Hey, look at that.
Something I thought of the other day was like wealth production helps everybody. A good example is there are exactly the same raw materials on Earth right now that there were 100 years ago or 1,000 years ago or 10,000 years ago. But we're not living poorly like people were. I mean, the poorest people live better than people did, you know, 1,000 years ago.
Yeah, that is very true.
Anyway, I just want to close up with a little bit of the crazy responses to that commercial we did. The government, the government's here to help you ad.
The Catmuff one or the pharmaceutical one?
Yeah, the Catmuff, okay. The joys of expanding government. Okay, one of your brother's friends thought it was real.
He was probably high.
He was offended by it. He was like, why would you post something like this, Frank? This is horrible. You know, meaning he was for liberty and not for reduction of... Right.
Good.
Somebody else told me it was, some liberal told me that it's crass and that sarcasm is the lowest form of communication.
I don't think sarcasm is the low form of, sarcasm takes a little bit of brains to figure out.
I know.
No offense to Frank's, my little brother's friend, but.
And then some moderate who I unfriended because she was just getting argumentative with me about everything said, I know the government isn't perfect, but at least they're trying. And things like this undermine that. Why did you make this video?
At least they're trying. That is hilarious.
Yeah, like, what are you doing? They're trying.
Right. That's like saying somebody's trying when they're breaking into your house and they slip on the rug and hurt themselves. Well, at least they try.
And, you know, when burglars break into your house and steal your things, it takes a lot of physical effort and planning and mental work to break into your house. You should commend them for
exactly.
that.
Exactly. You That's should feel sorry for them when they break their ankle or when they get bit by your dog or shot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any other crazy comments or...
One of my favorite responses was on some forum somewhere I'd never seen before. Somebody posted the commercial, and one of the responses to it was just a picture of Obama, and somebody had photoshopped in steam shooting out of his ears, like,
yeah.
A lot of people fucking loved it, including some liberals, and I think that open-minded liberals related to it because, you know, they may want the government to expand in the areas they want it to expand, but nobody really likes the idea. Or no smart people really like the idea of their neighbors spying on them.
Right.
Although a lot of people say, I don't mind if the government reads my emails because it protects me from terrorists. I mean, I said that 5 years ago, and we had Mike Mahoney say that line in the movie sarcastically. Well, his character was being serious, but we made fun of it. And that was something that came out of my mouth for real right after I met my wife. You know, I was like, I don't mind if they bug my phone. I have nothing to hide. And she looked at me like, are you f***ing serious?
I'm glad she helped bring you to the light. That's another way that she's, in a lot of ways, she's the third fiend. Is without DJ, I don't know if you'd be where you're at right now, Michael.
I would not. And, you know, she was a registered Republican when we got married, and I didn't know it, and I probably wouldn't have married her, and she didn't tell me. But we kind of help each other. Like, she takes me part of the way, I take her part of the way. You know, when I met her, she was a small government Republican with libertarian leanings, and now she's a f***ing anarchist.
Yeah.
She's more of an anarchist than I am, you know.
With all that Heinlein she reads. So,
I know. And, you know, her dad gave her Heinlein and Ayn Rand when she was like 12. So
nice. There you My go. Kids will be getting lessons on that when they're homeschooled. I guess we should...
You know, I saw a really insulting reference to Ayn Rand. It was in Futurama. Do you know the character Mom on Futurama?
Yeah,
The industrialist corporatist that, you know, destroys civilizations to make billions.
Right.
There's a really quick shot of her reading an Ayn Rand book.
Yeah, that's a nice little lefty jab. We have to express that, you know, obviously Ayn Rand didn't get the whole way there. She never became what we'd consider, you know, a Rothbardian anarchist or somebody who I would call a pure freedom lover. She still had her hang-ups, but she was an innovator, and I guess the world wasn't really there at that time either.
DJ just walked out and modeled her new t-shirt for me that says, "Don't ask what your government can do for you, period."
Where'd she get that? I love it.
Where'd you get that, DJ? Proudproducers.com. There's a free plug for
you. All right, yeah.
They have a lot of Ayn Rand stuff, but a lot of stuff that's just anarcho-capitalist.
I'll check it out. I'll check it out.
Yeah, so the thing about Futurama you have to remember is it's a funny as hell show, and I like most of it, but it does lean lefty.
Al Gore's daughter is one of the writers.
Al Gore's daughter, Kristen Gore, is a writer on it. And Al Gore, when Al Gore's head is on there, it's Al Gore voicing it.
She was like, "Daddy, could you do some voices?" He was like, "I guess so."
All right, man. I think we're past the end of our feasible limit under FCC rules. No, under what we like to do here. Any closing comments there about freedom? Cats?
Freedom and cats. Cats, I love them both, and hopefully I'll continue to have them both in perpetuity.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to sign off and go rub my cat's crazy cat spots, all three of them at once, with two hands in my toes while I wait for you to send me these files so I can edit them into our juicy goodness. And I'll write up, send me some pictures tonight, and I'll write up our little How Our Podcaster made. Right.
Sounds excellent.
Worms. Peace.
Hello, freedom fiends. It's your boy Dean from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I owe me and that include endorphins. No one won't ask permission, and I won't say please. Freedom fans, what fact that I gotta make.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Every Friday night, we'll have an exciting new episode where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi weave their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com. Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them.